I was leading a team, all managing the same processes, the same products, using the same systems, the same technology. When you look across the team, there's a pattern in the extent to which we put customers on hold, except for one colleague. We've got a team of people who all do one thing and then one colleague who does something slightly differently. Why is this colleague able to work in a way that's completely different to everybody else? You have to lift the hood on that, because it's possible that that colleague has got some real skills and knowledge that everyone else could benefit from. Likewise, at the other end, it's possible that there's a training need there.
Welcome to Talk Time with Max Contact, your go-to podcast for everything contact center related. Join us as we dive into the incredible world of contact centers and explore the latest trends, innovative strategies, and cutting-edge technologies that are reshaping customer interactions. In each episode, we're joined by industry experts to share their practical insights and advice to elevate your contact center performance. Whether you're looking to enhance operational efficiency, improve team management, or understand the impact of AI in contact centers, you're in the right place.
Welcome to another episode of Talk Time with Max Contact. This is Sean McIver, your host. In this episode, I'm talking to Adam Altoft, current Customer Experience Director for Europe at Rentokil Initial. With over a decade of experience working in the civil service, helping lead the way with their customer experiences for the government, Adam possesses an insight not too often heard. Welcome, Adam. I know that's a bit of a whistle-stop introduction. Feel free to fill in the blanks there.
Firstly, thanks very much for having me on. In terms of career, I mean, as you say, predominantly public sector and predominantly in the central civil service, where I worked for almost 14 years. So really lucky to have that experience, predominantly in HMRC, but also in some other departments. So as I say, my career has been mainly public sector, but for the last year or so, been really lucky to be at Rentokil Initial.
I have to start off with a bit of a loaded question, so forgive me. You studied criminology and human rights at the University of Hull. How did you end up on this particular career path from that as your starting point, if I can ask?
Gosh, yeah, that's a question and takes me back a bit. So first thing to say is it wasn't a grand plan at any point. There's been a lot of kind of following my nose, if you like. And I'm really lucky that that's worked out pretty well. So in terms of the criminology and human rights thing, so I was at school, knew that I wanted to go to university, didn't really know what I wanted to study, but at the time was doing law as an A-level. And the criminal side of that I really enjoyed and found really interesting. So, you know, I kind of knew I wanted to continue studying, and that was something that I enjoyed. And so that lent itself to criminology. And then that lent itself to my first job in the civil service, which was at the Inspectorate of Prisons, which was a fascinating and rewarding job. And then from there on to the Ministry of Justice, and then obviously from there on to HMRC, which was a slightly different path. But I think the kind of commonality in that thread was that studying that degree taught me around critical thinking and analysis, and that mindset and behaviors and skills, if you like, are something that's been consistent through my career. But since then, I've enjoyed a real variety of careers. So I work in customer service, but I've also worked in analysis, project delivery, a bit of time in estates and HR as well. So really varied experience. But my kind of approach has been quite simple, which is to focus on things that look interesting, enjoyable, and that I think, you know, I might be able to do a decent job of.
The additional point that I suppose that I would want to kind of just follow on from that, given what you've just said around following your nose and kind of seeing what's interesting to you, which I think is critically important for excelling in any role, did you find customer experience excellence, or did customer experience and excellence find you?
So again, there's a common thread through all of my career focused on delivering great service, you know, whatever kind of sector or industry that's in. But specifically when it comes to customer service and customer experience, I find it a really interesting and rewarding field because firstly, it's a really key part of a company focusing on how do you make sure that your customers have a great experience of your product and dealing with you. But as a leader in that field, it's really varied. So sometimes you're focused on really big picture strategic stuff and how is the sector and industry changing in the coming years and how do we make sure that we keep pace with that, down to real-time live operational issues that need to be dealt with in the next hour and everything in between. So for me, I found it a really stimulating area to work in, an area that has taught me a lot, has perhaps sometimes changed my views and experiences as a customer and consumer as well. So as I say, really varied and interesting field, I think.
Most definitely. And I think it's interesting, you know, even within the context of the conversation that we're having at the moment, it's still that reference to the customer, the person who you are providing a service to. I'm very conscious about the area that you worked in previously was within the HMRC. And obviously, you know, I don't want to go into the nitty gritty of it, but at a high level, as I understand it, at one point you were responsible for, I think, 4,000 staff across 8 different contact centers. When you look back and you think about that scale, are there different challenges at that scale compared to perhaps a more average contact center size of, say, 200 to 500 staff or even smaller size contact centers? And what does that look like?
Yeah, undoubtedly it's different. Of course it is. So I think firstly, I'll start with the things that stay the same. So the things that stay the same are you're trying to do a really good job. You're trying to deliver a great service to your customers at the end of your products and processes. And also you want your colleagues, the people that work for you, to have a great experience as well. And those are ingredients and mindset that I think are consistent across, you know, most leadership environments. So those things stay the same. The thing that's different is obviously the execution. So in a much smaller environment, you can get really into the detail. You can know each colleague, if you want to, at a very individual level. And so you can have a real kind of hands-on approach. I can only talk from my experience, but I would say to anyone that's leading a really big operation where those things are not possible, my advice to them would be what you need to focus on is how do you create the environment that helps all of those people be successful? And there's lots of things that are in that bucket, but, you know, in no particular order. If you think about how do you make people successful, then you've got, is the strategy clear? So firstly, do all of these colleagues understand what we're trying to do and why it matters? And that's really important because, you know, one of the other things you need are standard processes, standard ways of working, but they don't always work. Sometimes reality rubs up against them. So it's really important that when people are in those situations, they understand, well, maybe this doesn't quite work in terms of our processes, for example, but I know that the big picture here, the strategy is this. And so therefore, I can really confidently use my discretion, for example. So strategy is a big part of it. Things like the tools and systems. So literally, have colleagues got the tools that help them do the job properly? Are the jobs clearly defined? Have we got enough people? Have we got a way of communicating with each other? So do we understand what the current challenges are, what, you know, the kind of current focus points are? But that really has to work both ways. And one of the things that I really appreciate is it's easy when you're in strategic leadership roles to be wrestling with really difficult questions and struggling to find the answers. And sometimes the answers are found right on the front line by the people who are kind of doing the day-to-day work. And so you also need to make sure you've got a way of people being able to tell you and your leadership what works well and what doesn't work well. And obviously that also requires you to be, you know, really open to listening and engaging in that. And then there's lots more things besides around how you use data, how you performance manage, how you build talent pipelines, you know, how you coach people, but also really keeping people engaged. So are you giving them a reason to get up out of bed in the morning that is more than just salary? Are you giving them a reason to come to work and something to buy into? And then I think the final thing I'd say, you know, going back to that point around it's about helping other people be successful, one of my kind of key pieces of advice would be you've also got to be looking down the path. So what are the opportunities that are coming up? They're not here yet, but you can see they're coming to enhance that. And likewise, what are the risks that are coming that you want to start getting ahead of? And so, you know, my philosophy with this is you really want to help your colleagues be able to do a job as successfully as they possibly can. And, you know, that just gives you a flavor of what I think sits in that, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the fact that there are commonalities no matter the size of the business. And I like that you touched on those as well. In terms of some of those differentiators, one of the things that you mentioned was around measuring things and how do you measure success? And I guess it's a bit of a common theme over a number of conversations I've had now. But in terms of KPIs, you know, there are so many different KPIs that you can measure. Is there one that you would say is like, this is the one that I would pin CX or customer experience to? This is the KPI, or this is the group of KPIs that really allow that focus on that customer experience initiative?
Yeah, it's a great question, because the challenge is often you can have more data than too little. And the challenge is, how do you determine which is most important? So my philosophy is that what you're trying to do is boil it down to a small number of KPIs that matter most. And also that none of them really on their own are good or bad necessarily, but I put a lot of weight in on that word indicators. So to me, they're data points that prompt you to go and look at something rather than necessarily good or bad on their own. But from my perspective, I always start with customer. And so for us at Rentokil, pretty obvious ones. So are people buying things from us? Are people staying with us? Pretty good indicator of the experience that we're giving them. But also, we put a real premium on making sure that our customers have a voice into the company. So explicitly, do we ask their opinion on what it's like to be our customer and how we could do better? But also, I think there's a real skill in looking at the implicit feedback. So for example, are there trends in the things that customers contact you about? And do you kind of sit there and feel okay about it? Or is it a signal that there's perhaps an issue in the operation that you need to improve? Because when you look at your design customer journeys, this is not something that you necessarily need customers to contact you about. So it's giving you feedback all the time. But beyond customer, you're then looking internally at your typical suite of productivity and efficiency KPIs. But from a personal perspective, I really challenge myself in terms of, can I keep it to 5 or 10 really high-level KPIs that matter most? And then, as I say, it's about the KPIs, but it's also about the behavior. And the behavior for me is about using them as points of curiosity rather than good or bad necessarily.
I really like that concept that you've just touched on, that points of curiosity. I think that's a really powerful way of putting it. I'm going to jump wholeheartedly onto that. I'm going to steal it and use it as my own moving forward. But in terms of those points of curiosity, I wonder if you could just maybe expand on that a little bit for me in terms of where you find those points of curiosity and what you do when you find them.
I'd give you one quick example from an experience previously. So I was leading a team who all managing the same processes, the same products, using the same systems, the same technology, you know, just kind of happen upon one day that when you look across the team, there's a pattern in the extent to which we put customers on hold, for example, when they call us. And that pattern's really consistent, except for one colleague. So, you know, you've got a team of people who all do one thing and then one colleague who does something slightly differently. But, you know, in terms of outcomes around first contact resolution, CSAT, slightly above average in the team. And so on its own, you can't look at the data and say it's good or bad necessarily, but it raises a really interesting question. So, you know, why is this colleague, for example, able to work in a way that's completely different to everybody else? And you have to lift the hood on that, because in that example, it's possible that that colleague, for example, has got some real skills and knowledge that everyone else could benefit from. Likewise, at the other end, you know, it's possible that there's a training need there, for example. But it's just an example, I guess, of saying the data is really interesting. And I put a lot of weight in on looking for variances and anomalies, because I think in CX, customer service, and maybe other industries, it's really easy to focus on best in industry, world class, and they're really worthwhile and important aims. But I usually start from, how do we make sure that we're all best in team, best in company? And, you know, how do we make sure that we're leveraging the power of our best performers and learning from them? And so having data that shows you things that on their own don't necessarily give you answers, but raise questions and cause you to go and look further, in my experience, is really powerful.
Just on that point, though, I'd like to chase that a little bit further and just ask the question, you know, we're all human. And therefore, the psychology of this tracks almost universally. A bad experience, we're far more likely to talk about a bad experience, and we're far less likely to talk about a good experience. If we translate that into the contact center environment, most people are fully aware of where those problem issues are. And when a customer raises a really big issue, that's talked about quite a lot. How do you overcome that challenge of forgetting or losing focus of being able to celebrate on where it's working and where there are successes? And how do you counter that psychology and try and ensure that there is that balance between, yes, we need to focus here, but let's not forget these great successes we've got over here?
It's an interesting challenge. I mean, so firstly, I don't know, maybe it sounds a bit corny, but one of my philosophies is that complaints, for example, are a real opportunity to win. So firstly, those negative, in inverted commas, situations don't necessarily need to be negative, right? So I think this is a big part of mindset. So there's definitely research in the sector, for example, that, you know, not that you would strategically aim to create complaints amongst your customers, but if you're a company that responds excellently to complaints, you might be able to have more loyalty from your customers than a company that has no complaints at all, for example. So I think firstly, the mindset's really important. And so those kind of potential negative moments, seeing them genuinely as opportunities and, you know, seeing them as opportunities, firstly, how do you turn around this customer situation? Because there really is the opportunity there. And we can all probably think from our personal lives about a time when you contacted a company and you're not very happy about something, but they've listened, they've dealt with the problem, and you kind of come away potentially more happier than you were, you know, had it not happened. So really focusing on how do I seize this opportunity to turn this around, win this customer back over, first point. But then the second point, how do I seize this opportunity to make sure we really learn from this as a team and as a company? So they really are opportunities to win. But how do you make sure that you celebrate the good stuff? I think, firstly, just being really conscious of the need to do it is important. But secondly, I think particularly when you start to lead teams of people, feeling that you can put the questions and answers with them sometimes. So how do we make sure that we really celebrate successes? And what do you guys think would be a really valuable and rewarding way of doing that, rather than necessarily me just sitting and deciding for myself? It goes back to one of my earlier points about, you know, the best answers often come from the front line and those closest to the work, those closest to the problem, but those closest to the successes as well. But also where you can as a company, if you can invest in celebrating, I think that's really powerful as well.
Hope you're enjoying the conversation so far. If you're finding it valuable, we've got something special for you. Check out our latest industry report, a free resource filled with data-driven insights directly from the contact center landscape, created for contact center leaders looking to stay ahead of the curve. Find out more information via the link in this episode's resources.
I like the idea of that engagement with the people who are actually, not to use vernacular, but the people who are in the trenches, so to speak, the people who are, you know, at the front line and actually making use of the tools that they have available. I think ensuring that there's input from them is really critical. I suppose that leads on to the implementation of change. You know, we talked earlier on around, we know when things aren't working and that there is a need and a requirement to change. Can you talk us through your approach to designing and implementing change? How do you use customer analytics in that process? And how do you combine that to ensure that you've got the, you know, from the employee through to the C-suite feedback as part of that process?
Yeah, so multidimensional approach, I suppose, and in no particular order. So I think when I've been leading change before, the kind of ingredients of that for me have been, firstly, really getting myself comfortable with the change in terms of, do I believe in this? Because it's really hard to lead something you don't believe in. And that means you're not quite sure, or if you've got questions, then, you know, really pushing that until you get to a place where, you know, either you determine that you don't and, you know, the change either won't happen, or, you know, maybe you won't believe in it, for example, or more likely, you know, you gather the data and information that helps you get comfortable with it. So I think really kind of stress testing it yourself to make sure I can really put my name and my shoulder to this change, because I really do genuinely believe in it, I think is really important. in terms of the customer analytics and C-suite feedback, it's easy sometimes to see them, I don't know, potentially as mutually exclusive, but they're really not in my experience. So often you get the data points all pointing in a similar direction. And, you know, so a company like Rentokil Initial, for example, if our customers aren't happy about something, then, you know, you can be absolutely assured that internally we're going to be pretty tenacious in trying to sort that out and improve it because we want to delight our customers. So those things for us point in the same direction. I think one of the other things I would say about change is, firstly, it's a very personal and human experience, and, you know, humans are dynamic and all that kind of classic stuff about change curve. And, you know, we had some training on that recently, and it was a really helpful reminder about the stages of change and being conscious of that and understanding of that. But I think the final point I would make, it's easy sometimes with change to fall into the trap of thinking that you're moving something from bad to good. And often in my experience, what you're really doing is moving something that at one time really made sense and was invested in and thought about. But over time, things have shifted and there's now an opportunity for even better. And so it's a real skill, I think, for being persuasive about the need for change without necessarily rubbishing the past. Because one of the things I'm really conscious of in organizations and companies, particularly those with long-serving populations, it can be really damaging to get that wrong. So being really thoughtful and, you know, considerate about how you explain that in a way that is true and genuine. And as I say, in my experience, it's usually about going from something that at one time really made good sense, but for a range of good reasons, the world has changed a bit. And so this is opportunity seeking.
That makes perfect sense to me, certainly in the way that you've framed that. I'm going to leverage the topic of change and somewhat take it a bit of a turn. So you were working at HMRC, you were looking after 4,000 staff across 8 contact centers, and now you're the customer experience director at Rentokil, looking after the entirety of Europe. And I understand that you designed and implemented a full customer experience system across that same area. It's a big question with a couple of elements to it, so I'll just put it all out there, and then I guess feel free to talk about the elements of it as you see fit. But that would have taken into account things like localization, the legacy staff who have had their existing processes that you've need to account for, the strategizing and the rollout of that. You've got different systems that will need to be implemented. To most people, even just describing and beginning to conceive of that change is almost overwhelming. I put it to you, like, how do you tackle something that is that size? It just seems like it would just be massively overwhelming, especially going in as the customer experience director and going, here's what we need to change.
Firstly, your description of it is a good one in terms of the threads and the challenges. And that goes back to one of my earlier points about, you know, why CX and customer service is a really great field to work in, because I think that list is a really exciting list of challenges and opportunities. And it genuinely is exciting and not overwhelming. And partly it is because it's a team effort. So obviously I'm not doing it all on my own. And this is something that as a company we've been really investing in for a few years now. So I'm kind of picking up and working in partnership with people that have been at this for longer than I have as well. So it doesn't all fall to me. But to just build on your comments a little. So it's a great opportunity. We're across 18 different countries in the European region, but within those countries, we've got several different business categories. So it really is a multidimensional challenge for us. In terms of the intention and the focus, it's kind of the same as it's always been for us in Rentokil, which is to delight our customers. You know, so our corporate mission is to become the most loved services business on the planet. And that's right at the heart of how we deliver an outstanding experience for our customers. Linked to that, we are a rapidly growing multinational, but we are really committed to a multi-local feel. And so what we mean by that is that we want our customers in all of our countries, you know, in their local region and town and village, to feel more like they're, you know, dealing with a kind of local company than necessarily a multinational. And so customer experience is right at the heart of that. So how do you make people feel like they have a personal relationship with the company and that we really are on top of what their requirements are and how we make sure that we honor those and how we just deliver an outstanding service all the time? And, you know, at a strategic level, leading that, you know, one of our kind of big challenges is how do we balance the best way of doing things in terms of systems, processes, job design, ways of working, but with, as you say, really being thoughtful about and taking into account those necessary need for, you know, national variation. And that is at the heart of the challenge. But, you know, also we've got CX leaders in all of our markets as well who work in partnership with me. So it's a real team effort. But in terms of the strategy, it comes down to the typical stuff around people, process, systems, data. And as I say, you know, the kind of focus is for us within the context of our mission, our values, our vision, how do we do the best version of that for our customers?
A really solid answer to what was a pretty multifaceted question. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Really thorough answer there. Certainly lots to unpack. There is one final point that I want to touch on, and it's the particular word that you just used, and it's the word thoughtful. And I just want to circle back to that through a slightly different lens. And of course, it's the hot button topic of the century. It's AI, machine learning. How do you approach integrating AI, machine learning, whatever that automation looks like, within your customer experience processes, but ensuring that it's applied in a thoughtful manner? How do you ensure that you're not doing something at the sacrifice of that customer experience?
I mean, as you say, hot topic, an exciting topic as well. You know, there are tons of opportunity within that. The first thing I want to say, and it's a kind of broader point of philosophy, if you like, from my position, which is that it's really easy when you talk about customer experience and customer service to focus on phone calls, contact centers, emails, apps, all the bells and whistles that you put on that. And it's a really worthy and important part of it. But I start from, you know, at the heart of being a customer is you are usually paying money for a product or service, and are you getting what you pay for? You know, for most customers, that is what the customer experience boils down to. And so, you know, I kind of start from that really simple basis of, are we delivering our part of the deal? So one of our values at Rentokil is that we do what we say we're going to do. So we really test ourselves on that. And that means for us that we want to make sure that customers only contact us once they really need to. And when they do that, they get an outstanding service. Now, then you start to say, okay, well, you know, as part of that, is there room for AI? And of course, the answer to that is yes. But in terms of what does thoughtful look like on that, thoughtful for us on AI is about really a two-step test. So firstly, is this going to improve the customer experience? A simple question, but it's really easy to fall into an unhelpful trap of call deflection, things like that, that might help you drive down costs, but it's a false economy. It really is. So firstly, genuinely, is this going to improve the customer experience? And, you know, we're looking at rolling out some new contact channels in Europe. And, you know, as part of that, potentially, we may draw on chatbot technology, for example. But we want to make sure that we do that in an outstanding way. It has the result of getting customers answers to their questions faster, 24/7, and, you know, through more convenient channels. So that is what thoughtful looks like on AI. And the kind of second part of the two-step test is, can we use it to our advantage in a way that makes our colleagues' lives easier? And so long as it doesn't compromise on number one. So anything for us, and, you know, we've got a couple of examples where we're using it or looking to use it to take away or reduce burden on colleagues, but in doing so, frees up more capacity to focus more time on being with the customer, you know, and solving the customer issue. So that is really what AI looks like for us. And genuinely, and I hope I don't sound negative about it, because I'm not, there are some really powerful opportunities for us, but that is the way that we are thinking about it in Rentokil.
Incredible. I like the lens that you've put that through. I think it's really powerful to say it's a tool that can be used to unburden your staff and allow them to focus on what matters, where they're going to be most impactful. I think that's a really powerful point to end on. So Adam Altoft, Customer Experience Director for Rentokil Initial, thank you ever so much for joining me today. I hope that everyone listening has found that a useful conversation and hopefully speak to you again in the future. Thank you ever so much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you for tuning in to Talk Time with Max Contact. We hope today's discussion has sparked new ideas to help you advance in your contact center. To learn more about any of the topics discussed in this episode, visit www.maxcontact.com. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite streaming platform to help other like-minded individuals join the conversation. Also, stay tuned for our upcoming listener questions segment. We'd love for you to participate and share your thoughts. And remember to hit the subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a future episode. On behalf of everyone at Max Contact, thanks for listening.